Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second.
Hey everybody, for anyone who is still holding out on switching over to Lyft, asking for a quick favor here. First, switch over to Lyft, see how you like it. And second, when you do, get $50 worth of free ride credit by using my promo code. It is Backseat Rider, all one word. If you're liking this show, using that code is the best way that you can help me continue to bring you the podcast for free each week. You'll get $5 off each of your first 10 rides on Lyft. FYI, it is only for new users. And thank you, by the way, to everybody who has already done this.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com presentation.
There's some type of universal outer power, some bit larger power that affects the things that we do and sometimes the decisions that we make.
It was like, in a weird way, like the person I talked to was kind of like the sign that I needed.
I feel like they all come in from above, you know?
When I was still working as a reporter at NBC and had this cockamamie idea of quitting that job, driving for Lyft, and launching some kind of storytelling project, I came close to giving up entirely. At the time, you know, I was working full time and I brought up the idea to one of my good friends, Cyrus. And he said, all right, before you get too excited about doing it, sign up for Lyft, go out, give a few rides and see what it's like. See if people are interesting, see if people actually talk to you. So I took his advice and signed up, gave rides at night, on weekends, that kind of thing, just in my spare time. And something just wasn't clicking. I mean, I was still getting used to navigating the streets with the app on and trying to have these conversations with people. And it just wasn't really going anywhere. And I remember one night, it was rush hour, it was raining, and I was just feeling completely dejected. I'm like, this whole idea is stupid. I've got this great, stable job. What the hell am I doing out here driving Lyft? I'm already busy enough. I'm exhausted. Screw this. So I was this close to giving up, and I just dropped off a passenger. I was headed home and decided, all right, that's it. Fail, essentially. But then some little voice just kind of told me to leave the app open, leave it in driver mode until I got home. And I'll never forget what happened. I'm like three blocks away from my house, and the app beeps. That means a ride request came in. And I'm like, shit, I just want to get home. And bagged the idea entirely, but I'm like, all right, I'll just give this one last passenger a ride, and that'll be it. So I picked the woman up, and it was in the heart of Andersonville, and it's this blonde woman. She was in her 20s, and turns out she works as a stripper at one of the most popular strip clubs in Chicago, and she needed a ride downtown close to the Art Institute where she lived. And again, this was during rush hour, so we shared the car together for like 35 minutes. And during that ride, she was very open with me. I didn't record her or anything. This was before I got recording equipment into the car. But it was a very, very interesting ride. She answered every question that I had about what it's like to be an exotic dancer. I'd never talked to an exotic dancer before. And so that ride, if that ride hadn't happened, I looked at that as a sign that I should be doing this, that there are interesting people to talk to. Again, I was ready to give up. And now I am 41 episodes into Backseat Rider. I've given almost 500 Lyft rides, and the podcast has been downloaded well over a million times. So to me, that was a sign. And this past week, after a couple of people in the Backseat Rider Facebook group started talking about this whole notion of signs, I immediately thought of that story. And so this week, I decided to take that question to my passengers. Do you believe in signs? And if so, what is the strongest sign you've ever gotten?
I've actually been in situations where I've just been like, you know what? This means that I have to do that.
Yeah, I feel like it happens quite a bit.
It's all about feeling it, you know?
I felt like it was for me. It was something like
yo, this is for you, you're getting this.
I think that it felt unignorable.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this 41st episode of Backseat Rider, the podcast where I drive Lyft and whoever ends up in the backseat of my car becomes the cast of this show. And this week, I want to start with a quick story from a 21-year-old bartender who I picked up in Pilsen.
Do you believe in signs, like signals from the universe?
I think I do.
He has felt that way for the last 2 years. When he was 19, one night at about 9 o'clock.
One time I was with one of my friends, you know. They're like, hey, let's go. Like, everybody was, like, kind of drinking and everything, right?
Yeah.
I was like, no, I don't want to go. Like, no, come on, get in the car. Like, no, I just don't want to go. And I stay in the house. And then, like, 4 hours later, and then I received a message that they had a really nasty accident.
Now, to this day, he still doesn't understand exactly why he opted not to go.
He was feeling something that, like, they say, no, I just don't want to go in. I just don't want to go. I want to stay home. And yeah, they didn't, and I never went, and nothing happened to me. I don't know why, but I was fine.
Now, I should point out that nobody died. They were just badly hurt. But he still looked at that whole near miss as a sign that someone or something has his back. I was headed back into the city after a drop-off in the far northwest suburbs, and I picked up a 23-year-old woman who works in online advertising.
I don't believe in that kind of stuff. But...
not a believer in signs, but she did tell me this.
My mother, she's actually a cancer patient.
Okay.
And the first time she ever had cancer, she went through chemo, and she lost all her hair and got really weak and the works, and she hated it, but it helped. But it came back, and so the second time she had cancer, she said that she went to the casino, and she said that if she won big, it means that she's lucky, and that if she's lucky, then the cancer won't get her despite not going through chemo. So that night she won, I think it was like $10,000. So she didn't go through chemo that time around, and she survived. So, I mean, I was totally skeptical. I told her that she should go through chemo anyways, and that $10,000 meant nothing. But she didn't do chemo that time around, and it went away on its own.
So did that change your mind about signs?
I think that it was luck, but I know she would say different.
What would she say?
She would say that God was on her side that time. And she asked for a sign and he gave it to
her. Like, if I see, like, a black cat crossing the street, I'm probably not going to do, like, everything I wanted to do that day. Like, I might be a little bit more reserved.
This guy's 24, works as an account manager at a tech supply company. And he was one of a number of passengers I picked up this week who, when I asked about signs, brought up deja vu.
Like, deja vu, I get that a lot.
How often?
Oh, man, probably, like, once every 2 weeks.
Really?
I'll be like, I know, like, that happened before. Like, I know what to do in the situation sort of thing.
What do you think that means?
I don't know. That's a great question. I don't know what that means. I kind of just, I guess it kind of prepares me for what's next to come. Because I'll be like, all right, I know what that happened before. I did this in that situation, so maybe I should do the opposite, or maybe I should do that again because, you know, it ended up going well. So I kind of just pick and choose.
Can you remember the last time you felt deja vu?
Yesterday. I was actually moving into the place that you're about to drive me off, and I was driving the U-Haul or whatever to get here, but I remember that I hit a car previously. I don't know if it was a dream or what the hell it was, but I hit a car making this turn outside onto Belmont, actually. And so I, like, literally waited until the light was green before I didn't even try to turn on, turn into oncoming traffic. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to keep it cool and just wait it out because last time this happened, something bad happened. And then out there, there even was a previous time because there wasn't, but I felt it.
There could have been.
Exactly.
There could have been in an alternate reality.
Yeah.
Right. When it comes to frequent deja vu, again, he said every 2 weeks he gets it. That guy wasn't alone.
Maybe it happens pretty often, I guess.
How often do you experience deja vu?
Maybe like once a month, maybe.
That's pretty frequently.
Yeah. Yeah, like maybe if I like even like see a cat or something, like I'll be like, I feel like I've seen this cat before, or like I feel like, or like in maybe a moment where it's just like maybe I'm like cleaning something, and, or I don't know, like experiencing something with someone.
I caught this woman on a cross-country trip. She was going from New York to California on the train with her boyfriend, and they were on a layover in Chicago because of this 10-hour delay on Amtrak. And she had big deja vu, as a matter of fact, on the train the day before.
I had a moment there where I was like, wait, I think we were in this city before. And it's like,
for her, those moments aren't necessarily creepy. They're actually comforting.
I do have, like, dreams, and then suddenly I see them in, like, real life or something. Like you feel like you, like a deja vu moment. And then when you have those deja vu moments, that's when they say your life is in the right path.
This next passenger got in the car with her two middle school-age daughters. I was driving her from downtown out to the suburbs. And she's recently back working full-time after being a stay-at-home mom for the last 10 years.
5 years ago, my mother was diagnosed with lung cancer.
Okay.
And they lived in Florida. My parents lived in Florida, and we didn't see them a lot. So I finally was like, I got to get there, you know. Need to get there and make sure I see my mom. Flew down there, and I did see her for like 3 days I was there. And she got really sick the day I was leaving. So it's like I had to catch a flight. My dad took her to the hospital. And I got to say my goodbyes while she was still coherent. She wasn't in any pain so far, but... And then she passed away on my way back when I was flying back.
Wow.
So I kind of knew, though, too, when she waved goodbye and we were getting her in the car and she gave me a big hug, that I think that was the last time I was going to see her. And it was. But it was peaceful, actually. I was fine because I got to talk to her. And we had a rocky relationship a little bit. But so it was good.
So her sign, unlike most of the passengers we've heard from so far, wasn't anything visual. It was more of a voice.
I just had this internal feeling that I need to go. We like I said, we had a rocky relationship, and honestly, I hadn't spoke to her in months. And so I'm like, I need to go. I know I need to go now, and luckily I did, so...
I picked up this next guy on a Monday morning. He needed a ride from the north side out to O'Hare. And when he got in, he kind of had an intimidating appearance. Big guy, bald, with a big goatee, tons of tattoos, nose ring. But as soon as we started talking, that surface judgment that I made, it immediately dissolved. And he was in the back seat, actually headed to the airport, very excited to see his siblings for the first time in a while.
It's been 2 years now. This sort of a trip is pretty special. It's sort of like it's actually the first time I've ever had family come visit me, so it's kind of cool.
Actually, very cool, because for almost 4 decades, he was estranged from his brother and sister. They all have different dads and got split up after his mom died when they were all young children.
Let's see, so I was 4, and then I saw them again for the first time, I think, when I was 41, so like 37 years.
37 years. Yeah. What was that moment like?
I think in my head I said, like, okay, this could be one of two Lifetime movies. It could either be the one where it's like amazing and it's fantastic and it's like, you know, they're going to show this one on Christmas or something, or it's the one where it's like everybody ends up dead or something, or somebody's like a serial killer.
Right.
So I was like, it's either going to be one of those two. And probably all of us, I think, had our, if this was too intense, what's our escape route? Which sounds maybe a little bit dramatic, but yeah, just sort of, it was amazing. We got together all together for the first time for a Thanksgiving, thing. We'd rented sort of like an Airbnb. It was intense. And I think my brother had said it well. He said, it's, you know, we're all related. But it's like we're all strangers.
They reconnected via Facebook, and despite each of them being thrust into what he describes as rough home situations, all separate from one another, he and each of his siblings all wound up finding success in life. Right now, he works as a social worker and actually runs the social work department at a local university.
So, like, it was...
Yeah, it just feels sort of serendipitous that, you know, you can come from a rough spot. And I know that there's a lot of my own personal privilege in there. But to come from that and to again, feel like I've fallen into things is pretty, I don't know, pretty unusual, it seems.
It's been a long road, but he believes that different signs have served as guideposts along the way. And here's the most vivid example. And for him, this came to him in the form of a dream.
So when I came to Chicago in 99, I think that's right, from where? From Kalamazoo, Michigan. I came to get my social work degree and my degree in divinity down at University of Chicago. And I was maybe two academic terms into my divinity degree. And I wasn't happy. I was feeling, I was feeling like I wasn't doing what I should be doing. And I had just a really powerful dream. And usually, you know, for what signs are, it's normally in my dream. I don't know if it's necessarily usually in my waking life going about things. And it was a very, I guess as dreams are, a surrealistic dream. And I can't recall it fully now, but I remember that I had to sort of crawl down this log into this muck, and I knew it was going to be challenging. I knew it wasn't something that I wanted to do. And, you know, a voice from somewhere said, there's another way. And, you know, at that point, I realized that there was another branch that was sort of across the muck, but not in the muck. And so I had switched over. And at that point, when I woke up, I thought, okay, you know, I think it's time to stop being unhappy doing this degree.
So what do you feel like it was about that dream where you immediately equated it with your life situation? In such a vivid way.
Sure. I think that it felt... unignorable, if that makes any sense. Like, I don't think that I had considered any other explanation to it. It's like that explanation in my head, like, this is what this is about, hit. And it felt so, yes, that's right, that's exactly what this is about. That I didn't sort of spend any time pondering through, like, well, maybe it's about this other thing, you know.
Like, it was crystal clear.
It felt crystal clear, exactly.
A couple more crystal clear signs to tell you about, including a literal one, a little yellow flyer, actually, that forever changed the life of a former drug trafficker.
And I saw the flyer, and the first thing I told myself, subconsciously, I told myself, I'm winning this battle.
That interview coming up, but first, I need to pause for a moment to tell you about a couple of the sponsors that are making it possible for me to bring you Backseat Rider for free each week. The first one, you might have heard me talking about before, it is TrueCar. And TrueCar is a service that, if you're in the market to buy a car, will show you what other people paid for the same car that you are looking for, which is arguably the most important piece of information that you can take with you into a dealership. Now, I use TrueCar when I bought my most recent car, which was brand new. But one thing a lot of people don't realize is you can also use TrueCar to buy a used car. In fact, there are over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. Again, you will see what other people paid for the car you want so you can know what a fair price is and feel confident. Also, get this, TrueCar users save on average $3,000 off MSRP. So when you're ready to buy a new or a used car, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident, car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.
Hey, have you heard? Podcast One has a whole bunch of awesome new shows filled with big names that are waiting for you on our brand new amazing app. This one's a game changer. There's Norman Lear talking to Amy Poehler, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and Charles Barkley. Geffen Playhouse Unscripted with Bryan Cranston, Josh Gad, and soon Neil Patrick Harris.
Nice.
OC Real Housewife Heather Dubrow's World. Lady Gang's Three Mimosa Podcast with Leah Michelle, Nelly Furtado, Elle King, and more. Plus every episode of The Adam Carolla Show, Dan Patrick, and Rich Eisen. And if you like what happens in the ring, we've got Steve Austin, Chris Jericho, Chael Sonnen, and a whole bunch more. So download our one-of-a-kind new app and see for yourself. Go to the App Store, Google Play, or download it now at podcastone.com.
All right, before we get back to the show, quick heads up about a TV show that I'm really excited to check out as soon as I get a TV again. This is the fourth season of a show called Alone. It's on History. And there have been a lot of survival shows over the years, but Alone is different because, as the name implies, the survivalists who are competing on it, they are truly alone. There's no camera crews with them or anything. They're actually taught how to film themselves. So there's five competing teams this season: father, sons, brothers, one married couple, and the goal is to outlast the other teams. And it all happens up on North Vancouver Island, where these folks have to fend off predators, they got to deal with crazy weather, and they're only given a small handful of items to get by with. So this isn't only a test of endurance and ingenuity, it's as much about mental toughness, depending on your partner to survive, resilience, suffering, all those kinds of things that really reveal who they are at the core. So check out the newest season of Alone, Thursdays at 10, 9 Central on History.
Things happening, it kind of becomes a pattern, and then it makes you question, huh? I wonder what the purpose of this is. Oftentimes it stems from failure, I found.
This is a 28-year-old, and he leads the sales team for an online headhunting firm. Drove him from Lincoln Park out to the West Loop. Now, when I asked him about signs, he first told me about a breakup. His then-girlfriend was about to study abroad in London, and he was about to move from Chicago to Seattle, so he didn't see the relationship working.
To be totally frank, I was a bit selfish. I was 24. We were young. But, yeah, it was definitely a crappy move on my part, so...
But coincidentally, right after that study abroad, his ex's cousin was getting married in Seattle, of all places. My passenger took that as a sign.
I called her when she was on her way back, and she was hesitant, and rightfully so. But we decided when she was coming to town that we'd meet up for lunch, and both of us were really, really nervous. And we went to lunch, and that spark just reignited.
How did you know during that lunch that here's the spark?
The butterflies. I mean, realistically, I hadn't been that nervous in a long time.
A job happened to place him in Seattle. A wedding happened to place her there.
I think one of the reasons I thought it felt more like a sign than a just happenstance is that these things happened in succession. Two very, very important things, you know, the changing of a career, especially one that you'd kind of sunk your lifeblood into, and reconnecting or connecting in a stronger way with a partner. Those things, it just didn't feel like a circumstantial instance.
And to this day, he says he's thankful to have gotten a second chance.
Yeah, it's really been a fantastic journey with her, and we're really happy right now.
I have signs all the time.
The week that I drove on this question was Taste of Chicago. So there were bands, there were entertainers in town from across the country. And these two dancers from Miami landed in the back seat. And funny enough, both of them credit signs with steering them in the right direction professionally.
I was trying to go, like I say, to a party. And my friend was like, hey, no, man, just go with me to this audition. And I'm like, nah, I'm not even with the agency. And like, I was in LA. I'm like, they didn't even tell me about it. He's like, no, just go and crash or whatever. And I'm like, nah, bro, like, I don't want to go. And then he convinced me to go, and I was like, okay, I'll take you there. I'll just take you there, and I'll wait for you. And then I ended up doing it, and the only person they booked it was me. So it's like I ended up living in LA for like a year because I booked that audition, and I kept just working there, and I was like, that was a sign for me.
That chance audition landed him a spot in a recent commercial for Boost Mobile. And he says he never would have booked that first commercial if he hadn't given his friend a ride that day. And the whole experience seemed like just like the planets kind of aligned for him.
Usually like in LA, parking is hard. So I was like, I'm just going to drop you and then just chill in the car, wait for you. And then the parking was right next to the spot. You know, everything was like smooth. I went in, you know, I felt good. And he was like, oh, just put your name down. And then I asked the lady at the front desk, I was like, can I do it too? And she was like, yeah, it doesn't matter. You could do it. So I put my name down. They called me. You know, I killed it. And then they're like, oh, wow. So I had already the feeling that they liked me right away. I didn't even know that they're going to book me. So on my way back to Vegas at that time, because I was living in Vegas, I left. Like, the next day, I was like, ah, whatever, I'm going back to Vegas. I got to Vegas. I'm getting home, and they call me, hey, you booked it. I'm like, damn, I got to come back now.
Now, the other dancer in the car, he had an even more dramatic story. He's from a country called Suriname, which is this small country just east of Venezuela. And his sign, funny enough, was an actual posted sign.
I went to school and I saw a flyer saying that a flyer of a dance competition. It was an individual battle, all-style battle, and the grand prize was the most that I ever seen, or it was the most just in general in my country. It was $5,000.
What right? country?
I'm from Suriname. Suriname, that's in South America, right above Brazil. Small country. We speak Dutch out there, but it's very. You got everybody there, you know? You got everybody there, but very small. So I saw that, and I was 17 at the time, and I saw the flyer, and the first thing I told myself, subconsciously, I told myself, I'm winning this battle, right? Just, I don't know. It's not easy. I just said, I'm winning this battle. I felt it. I felt like it was for me. It was something like, yo, this is for you. You're getting this. And that was my first time, because I always been in a crew, always been family-based. I've never been solo. That was my first time actually being solo and handling, putting a whole show together solo. Long story short, I did it and I won. I won a bike. I won a scooter and $1,500.
No.
And
how old were you?
I was 17. And my parents were happy. I was happy. And I came out in the newspaper and they wrote, what they wrote was another sign for me. They wrote, this dude won, blah, blah, blah. Christian Omtak won this battle. And everybody thought that his style has international standards. Like, then for me, it was like, damn, like, if these people see me on an international platform, that means I got to get out of here. I got to go to the States and I got to go follow my dream because I love what I do.
That's not what happened, at least not right away. At the time this was all unfolding, he was still involved in the drug trade. He calls it the underground.
So I was 16, 15 when I started doing that on the side. Got a little too involved. And right after I won, I tried to go and make a last trip of the underground to try and make some money to come to America. And that trip didn't go too well, and I got locked up in Holland for a whole year. So that's when I had time to reflect on, like, I felt like Tupac, honestly. Like, I'm on here, man. I need to make moves. I need to, like, you know, like, train hard. And that's when I just personally decided, because I could only dance 1 hour. I went from dancing every single day with all my friends, all my people, to only being able to dance 1 hour a week.
Because you were in jail.
Because I was in jail. And I was writing papers to the head person to, like, hey, I'm a dancer. I don't want to do nothing wrong. I just want to ask if I could have an hour a day to train 5 days a week or something. Oh, yeah. Give me a little bit more than an hour a week. Because I need to move, you know, I'm a dancer. That was, obviously, I'm in jail, so he said, nah. So that's when I realized, yo, I love dancing so much. It's such a big part of me that it's just plain stupid for me to try and play a gangster or trying to make money in the underground when it's not, that's not what I'm...
If we're right here at the Ross.
That's not what I, you know, that's not what has been blessed upon me.
From when to when were you in jail?
It was 2007 to 2008. And then after that, I went back to Suriname, sold my bike, my scooter, bought my ticket to the States, and here I am, living my dream.
He told me if he hadn't seen that flyer on his way to school that day, he doesn't know if he'd even be here in the United States dancing professionally. So in the exact same way, I feel like if that stripper hadn't landed in my car that one night, I might still be outside doing weather live shots for the news. So now I'm curious to know, do you buy into this whole notion of signs? And if so, let's hear about them. Let's hear the stories. Drop me a line on Facebook. I'm at Anthony Ponce. Last name is spelled P-O-N-C-E. And you can also share your stories with other Backseat Rider listeners by joining up with our closed group on Facebook. All you have to do is search Facebook groups for Backseat Rider Community, and a moderator will approve you. You can also call me or email me. My contact info is in the show notes for your convenience. Also, one last quick reminder to please sign up for Lyft using my promo code BACKSEATRIDER, all one word. Again, that is good for $50 worth of ride credit. Backseat Rider is edited by Bob Gilmartin and produced by me with the help of Louis Kazmarek. Also, thank you so much to WTTW and WTTW.com for their support of this podcast. Look for new episodes of Backseat Rider every Wednesday on PodcastOne.com, the all-new Podcast One app, which is now available in the App Store and on Google Play. It's got all kinds of new features. You can find articles, episodes, make playlists, comment and connect with other fans, all that kind of stuff. And of course, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts as well. I will see everybody next Wednesday.